Hey, Anna, did you know that the closest star system to the sun is called Alpha Centauri?
I did not know that.
And it is a three-star system.
Wow.
So imagine that. If you lived on a planet there, you'd have three suns in your sky, two yellow ones and one little red one.
Oh, this is like in Star Trek when Luke and the two moons, suns
That definitely
on
doesn't
his
sound right
home
at all.
planet.
That sounds completely wrong.
Star
I don't know how to
Wars.
correct that, but it's not Star Trek. But anyway, and what's
Wow.
cool is that we found a planet around one of those stars. So there is an actual planet around the system, and it's the closest one to the sun.
What?
I know. Isn't that crazy?
How close to the sun?
Well,
Like,
it's still 25 trillion miles away.
oh, well, that's hard to get excited about, but that's cool. That's still cool.
It's still the closest one.
Okay. I mean, I'm sorry. You're right. Very exciting.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman. In this episode, we'll talk about exoplanets and chat with Kevin Wagner, the University of Arizona grad student who both discovered and captured an image of a distant exoplanet. Plus, we're going to answer a kid question.
Well, thanks so much for joining us for this first ever episode of Looking Up. And so what is this podcast you're asking yourself? Well, it's talking about astronomy topics, and anything cool up in outer space.
So now you know what this is. The next question is probably, who the heck are we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's Dean Regas, co-host of PBS Stargazers and the astronomer at the Cincinnati Observatory for the last 17 years. And I'm Anna Heeman, and I am not an astronomer at all. But we work together at the Cincinnati Observatory, where I ask Dean a lot of questions while he's trying to work.
I know, I'm trying, but she keeps asking more and more questions. But what I found is she's really, you know, has these great questions that need to be answered, I think. And
that's true.
And we drive our coworkers crazy with these conversations back and forth. And so, why not make a podcast and drive you guys crazy with these questions? So for this first episode, we wanted to talk about these really exciting discoveries of exoplanets. These are planets that orbit other stars other than the sun. And we found so many of these in the last few years that it's really quite a cool field. Like, so if somebody asked me like 15 years ago and they said, okay, we're going to look for planets around other stars, how many do you think we're going to find? I would have said, I don't know, a couple dozen, two.
Really?
I don't know.
Just a couple? I mean, the universe
I'm very,
is huge.
I'm very negative.
Oh, yeah.
You
don't have to tell me that. I get it.
You got to remember. I'm very pessimistic about things.
You just reminded me. Yeah, that's very true.
So, but it's amazing how many new planets that we found and these really cool techniques to find this. Because basically what you're doing is you're taking a telescope, you're looking at a star, and you're trying to find a very, very faint thing next to it. Like this bright star is blazing away. It's like, you know, burning out the cameras of your telescope. And you're trying to find this little tiny thing. It's like a needle in the haystack.
And how do you even know what it is? I mean, when you find it, I'm sure you would know, but
exactly.
How do you know that you found something cool?
Yeah, I don't know how they figured this out. These are really smart people. I mean, because what they do is they look for, there's a couple ways. You can look for a star that wobbles back and forth as if an unseen heavy thing is moving it.
Oh.
And so that's one way you find this star wobbling, and you can figure out, well, does it repeat its wobble over and over again? Then there's an unseen planet there that's moving it. And so that we found like really big planets that way, because you need like a big Jupiter-sized thing to move a whole star a little bit.
Yeah.
But they didn't find very many planets that way.
Hmm.
So the best way is that we look for a planet going in front of the star. So it's like a little mini eclipse.
Hmm.
And so if this planet goes in front of the star, then the light of the star dips just a little bit, like a super tiny fraction. But the astronomers can detect that dip of light. And if it does it over and over again, then you get a pattern. You can figure out how big the planet is, how fast it orbits around, and all sorts of cool stuff.
That is some dedication to – I'm not a details person, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like you'd really have to be on your game.
Exactly. And here's where my pessimism comes in. So quite a few years ago, NASA launched the Kepler Space Telescope. So they put this telescope up in space, and they're like, okay, we're going to look at all these stars, and we're going to find all these planets going in front of all these stars.
Okay.
This is really rare. Like on Earth, we only have Mercury and Venus could come between us and the sun.
Okay.
And that doesn't happen very often.
And those are the transits.
Yeah, exactly. The transits.
See, I know stuff.
Exactly what we're talking about. The transits.
I'm picking up things.
And like they never, like we have a transit of Venus 2 times every 100 years. Oh. So I was like, all right, how many planets are they going to find with this Kepler Space Telescope waste of time thing? Like they're going to launch it up there. What are they going to find? 2 or 3 planets? I thought this is a waste of money. And
who knows better than NASA? Dean Rickett
does. Exactly. I'm glad they didn't ask my opinion.
That's really, why wouldn't they have just like shot you an email being like, hey, or a text, like, hey, what do you think? Kepler, yes or no?
Luckily,
thumbs up, thumbs down emoji.
Luckily, back then, they didn't really care what I think. They still
that.
They still don't.
That's crazy.
Good point, because the thing that I missed was like, okay, they're not going to aim at like 2 stars. They're going to aim at 150,000 stars at one time. And watch this for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I thought, okay, well, all right, maybe they'll find 2 dozen then. All right, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They're going to find 2 dozen.
You bumped it from a dozen to 2 dozen.
Yeah, I'll give them 2 dozen.
Based on that information.
Yeah, yeah. All right,
okay,
maybe 2 dozen.
That seems fair.
Yeah. And so.
So optimistic. So much hope.
I know. I'm such a downer sometimes.
I know. I'm going to stop asking you stuff. Just kidding. That's never going to happen.
I know. You'll keep asking.
That's
right. Good. So then they found thousands. That's the thing. It's like thousands of planets orbiting these stars, all just by measuring these little dips of light. And that, even the non-pessimistic astronomers are surprised. They're like, no way, thousands.
So even the ones that were excited about this, they even exceeded their expectations.
Exactly, exactly.
But these are all legit because it's through
They've all been verified,
wow.
Or at least lots of them have been verified. There's still thousands that are called candidates, meaning they think they are, but they have to be backed up with ground-based telescopes and say, confirm, this is a planet.
Okay.
So what we bumped up from, like, astronomers would have said, okay, maybe out of every 100 stars, there's one planet around those 100 stars. Now they bumped it up to every 5 stars has a planet. In our part of the galaxy. That is like crazy.
Okay.
That means planets are everywhere. And that's what's so exciting about this field is that it's full of surprises. We're finding planets around all sorts of different stars, all different colors, temperatures, sizes. And it's really, and like I said about Alpha Centauri, that we found a planet around a little red dwarf star that's the closest star to our sun. And that's pretty cool.
So when you say a dwarf star, you mean a smaller star.
Very small, yes. Yeah, our sun is like mid-sized.
Assumptions.
Our sun,
even though it's giant, us, it's like ba-bam. But
exactly.
It's actually just like a little wimpy.
Yes. And so
that's crazy.
That is, you ready for the next surprise?
Oh, God, I'm ready. Let's do this.
So our yellow sun is, you know, it's not that common in the universe, in the galaxy. And so we were looking for stars around, or planets around yellow suns like ours.
Right.
And that's nice, but that's not a big population. The majority of the stars in our galaxy are red dwarfs. So these are very tiny stars. Mm. And if you would have asked even optimistic astronomers 10 years ago, could you could you have a planet around a red dwarf star? They would have said, no way, Jose.
Really?
And now we found them. So there are planets
shows what they know.
Everywhere, that's for sure.
So what's the deal with TRAPPIST-1? That's like the one I keep seeing a lot about.
Yeah, that is the unbelievable system where there's this little star and it has 7 planets around it.
Oh my gosh.
And that's the first time we found that many planets around stars and any star other than our solar system. So it's also a very weird star. Have you heard what they call it?
Is it that it's an ultra cool dwarf star? I like that they call it that.
I know.
Officially.
I know. I wouldn't you like to be called ultra cool?
Like as a title. Yes, I would.
Should I call you that at the work from now on?
Yeah, I need new business cards while we're at that, thinking about it then, too.
So this is one of those red dwarf stars. This is one of these tiny stars.
But they said nothing could be around.
There's no
right?
way. Now, there's 7 planets around this one.
And the universe is like, just kidding. Guess what?
I know. That's what's so surprising. Amazing. In this field, more than any other, we're finding all these special surprises. Mm-hmm. And I think what people get excited about with TRAPPIST-1 is all these planets are close together. Like, they're not very far apart. Like, you could go from one to the other, like we go to the moon. And so people have this idea of, oh, what if they all have life on them? And do the life compete with each other? Is it a federation of planets?
Oh my gosh.
Around TRAPPIST-1. I think people start getting excited. And then people will start confusing Star Trek and Star Wars and get start wars and things like
that. That was one time.
Oh, I'm sure there'll be more. Now, let's continue our conversation about exoplanets and bring in Kevin Wagner, a University of Cincinnati graduate, now studying at the University of Arizona. And he discovered a brand new exoplanet. Well, Kevin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Dean.
Well, we're really excited about this new planet that you've helped find. So tell us all about it, its name, the details, everything you know.
So it's called Scorpion 1b. It's the first planet that our survey of stars in the Scorpius Centaurus star-forming region. It's the first planet that we uncovered in this survey, and it's a pretty big planet. It's about four times as massive as Jupiter, and it orbits really far away from its star, about 16 times further than Jupiter does in our own solar system. But unlike our own solar system, this planet is among four stars, not just one. There are two pairs of stars, and this world is curiously right in between the four. And we actually didn't even know that it was four right when we found it. That's a new development, that a new star has been found in the system as well.
So it's a four-star system with a planet bigger than Jupiter.
That's right.
That sounds really weird. I mean, is this a rare find?
It is really weird, and honestly, it's the first of its kind. We don't know of any other planet that orbits in such a strange configuration of stars. We know of planets that orbit either really on a really wide orbit outside of the stellar binary or triple, or planets that orbit really close to one of the components, but we've never found a planet that seems to be so shared between the stars before.
So if you were standing there, or at least hovering above the planet, how many you'd see four suns? Are they all similar colors, or do we know that?
No, they're different colors, actually. So they're what we as astronomers call an A, K, E, and M quadruple. So the biggest star is the A star. It's about twice as massive as our sun. And then next to it is M dwarf, which is about... Right. We actually aren't too certain of its mass, but something like maybe half of a solar mass, with the uncertainty there of like 20% or so. And then orbiting distant from those and outside of the planet as well are two other stars, a G-type star and a K-type star, which means that G is about pretty similar to our sun, like 96% the mass of our sun, so a pretty close match. And then next to it is the K-type star, which is 60% the mass of the sun.
Wow, what a variety. So how did you find it? What made this such a unique find?
So we found it through direct imaging, which makes this world really unique, and that we know of around 2,000 to 5,000 planets around other stars, depending on whether or not we count the candidates or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we've only successfully taken images of about a dozen or less.
Yeah, because it's not easy to just take a picture and see a planet. I mean, let alone see a alien waving at you. I mean, this is, you said, a big planet, right? I mean, that was the key, that it had to be kind of big and far away?
Yeah, so it has to be... So in order to image a planet around a nearby star, it has to satisfy a few criteria at present. One, it has to be a very big planet, because, of course, bigger planets are brighter, but it also has to be very young, and that helps us also because young planets are brighter. They're hot and more luminous. They have this energy left over from their formation, and then as they age, they cool, and they become difficult for us to image. And also, it's quite far away from it, from the closest star in the system, I said 16 times further away than Jupiter. So you can imagine that planets, even like Jupiter right now, are just at the limits of being able to be detected with direct imaging.
Yeah, so it's not like we're seeing Earth-sized planets with the picture, but yeah, so how do you block out the light of that giant star, or those four stars, to pick out this little needle in a haystack kind of thing?
So two primary technologies. One is called a coronagraph, which is a technology that was invented to block out the light from our sun, actually, to be able to image the fainter structures around it called the solar corona. And now we're using this masking technology to block out the light from distant stars so we can image the planetary systems around it. And in addition to that, we use what's called adaptive optics, which is a deformable mirror technology. And what we do is we actually measure the distortion effect in the Earth's atmosphere in real time at about 1,000 to 2,000 times per second. And then we deform our mirror and the exact way to take out that distortion and provide images as clear as almost as if the Hubble Space Telescope took them.
How do you deform a mirror? Isn't it kind of fixed? And what do you use to, so it like warps so like jello?
It's a rigid glass structure, but if you apply a stress to it, it will slightly deform. So what we have actually is a mirror with about 1,000 actuators behind it. And some use piezoelectronics that actually push on it. And we in Arizona typically use magnets. So the mirror is actually hovering above a bed of magnets. And then by changing the electric signal to the magnets, we can use those to exert different forces on different areas of the mirror.
Wow. So this was just kind of like a project, right? This wasn't like, when you started this, did you think, oh yeah, I'm going to totally find a planet, no problem?
So the project is actually designed in a way to answer the question of how many of these stars have this type of planet. So from a scientific standpoint, even if we were to find no planets, we would still learn something.
Yeah, so, I mean, it sounds optimistic. How many? Let's see, 10, 20. Well, you got one. That's pretty good. I'm surprised, because I was surprised that the one was found. That's really awesome.
Yeah, and we were really surprised that it was this one.
Oh, really? Why? Because of the multiple star system?
Yeah, it's in such a peculiar configuration. And actually, I should mention that since we found it last year, we've learned a little bit more about it. And it's moving really fast. So fast, actually, that it can't possibly be bound to one of the stars in the system. That if it is actually really a planet, it has to be orbiting all four and bouncing back between the stars in a really chaotic orbit. And I say if it is a planet because now that situation is so weird that there are people now that are saying this is just too crazy, it can't possibly be a planet. And some people actually believe that it's a really peculiar background star that happens to share all of these properties that would look just like a planet.
Hmm. Well, I know that was a big deal with that the one star Fomalhaut, that they saw a planet by that, and they were like, well, is it a planet? Is it not a planet? And but if it is, it could like bounce back and forth between stars. So it might like, is it like a figure eight pattern that it goes around, or?
It would be entirely chaotic, meaning that if you were to start it at one point in the system with one velocity, its orbit and orbital evolution would be totally different than if you started in another place with a slightly different velocity.
Oh, man. Anna's bummed out now. I can see she's bummed if it's not a planet, right?
I mean, I'm all excited.
Believe me, so am I.
Yeah. Let's just say it's a planet. I think if we say it enough, everyone will just be like, it must be. I think we'll just keep with that narrative.
Now she's going to go to Pluto in a second.
You can't demote a planet.
More lines of evidence that this is a planet than any of the directly imaged planets in the past. And it's really just the weirdness of the situation that makes it so hard to believe. And I, for one, I'm not convinced by one explanation versus the other. I think at the moment it's a game of judging probabilities. So if this thing is a background star that shares all of the colors and motions that would make it look just like a planet, then it would have to be among, it's hard to put a number to it, but certainly more rare than 99% of the stars that we know about. And some people would make the argument that that is more likely than finding a planet in this type of orbit, but I would argue that we honestly just don't know that probability.
Well, yeah, I mean, because how far away is this star system?
It's about 400 light years from Earth.
All right, so that's pretty decent distance. And so, because one of the questions we always get is, okay, what? There's a lot of speculation about these planets that are these exoplanets. Like, what do we know and what do we not know about this planet?
So, like I said, we know it's about four times as massive as Jupiter. We know how far away it is from one star, and we know that it would have to have this really strange orbit that we haven't seen in any other planet before. other than that, we could ask a slew of interesting questions. One of my favorites is, does this planet have a rich system of moons like Jupiter does in our own solar system?
Oh, yeah.
16 at least that I know off the top of my head, and even more that are just fascinating worlds in themselves. That is there people among us that want to call Jupiter's moons planet.
Mm-hmm.
So you can play the game of asking what's a planet at pretty much every level of object and that may or may not orbit a star.
Everything's a planet to Anna. It's all planets.
I really am into planets. I just feel like, let's go ahead and just make everybody feel important. Call them a planet. Call it a day.
Yeah, but if Kevin now found a weirdest kind of star, this could be even
stars
better.
Stars are cool.
This could
too.
Be better.
This is very difficult
well,
for
honestly,
me.
Honestly, I can't be too upset either way because, like I said, when we announced the discovery, we had more lines of evidence pointing to this is a planet than any other directly imaged planet in the past. And those lines of evidence still have me leaning toward believing that this is a interesting object and that it very likely is a planet. But in the case that it's not, it's a really good lesson for the whole community that if this thing is a particularly malicious background star that holds all of the properties that we would look for to confirm that something is not a background star, then this game of directly imaging planets is a lot harder than we thought it was.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think of is, just, man, these things are so far away and give off so little light to actually capture a picture of it. Whether star or planet, well, Kevin, congratulations. It was a great find.
Very
and
exciting.
We're really excited for you for this and hope more come in the future as time goes on.
Oh, thank you, Dean.
Well, we've been talking with Kevin Wagner, a University of Arizona grad student who discovered an exoplanet. Well, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dean and Anna. It was nice talking to you.
Me too. All right, so as you can imagine, during Dean's outreach work with schools, he gets all kinds of crazy questions.
Oh, yeah.
Between kids coming to the observatory, you going out to visit kids. I mean, kids do say the darndest things, right?
They have definitely.
The craziest questions. So I wanted to, I don't want to pick a favorite, but this is a good one.
Okay.
And I think this is a good question that, you know, kid question, but also, you know, just curious. You know, kind of interesting a thing that one of kids asked on a field trip.
And by the way, I do not know this question in advance, so just to
That's
let
right.
you guys know.
Okay. He did ask for clues, but I said no.
Okay.
All right. So the question is, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Oh, my gosh. Can we travel outside the universe?
Like, whoa.
Yeah.
Can we travel outside the universe?
Right. Like,
that's,
you know,
deep.
You, exactly.
Ooh, man.
Told
well,
you, it was
so
a doozy.
We can travel to the moon. That's no problem. Well, kind of.
It's just no problem.
Spend
Do
a
it
few,
every day.
Spend a few billion dollars, make some rockets.
Build a Starbucks up there.
Right. Get Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin.
That's right.
So it takes you 3 days. So travel time to the moon is 3 days. Travel time to Mars, if we wanted to send a crew there, that's going to take you 7 months.
7 months.
7 months. And then if you want to go to Pluto, your favorite non-planet.
It is a
we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
Your favorite object in space. Pluto would take you 9.5 years to fly there. So then if we're going to go a little farther, let's go to Alpha Centauri, our star system we talked about earlier, the closest star system to our sun. And we want to go visit that planet around the little star. With our fastest spacecraft, it would take you 74,000 years to get there.
Well, now that's a downer. 7 months, I could maybe do. 3 days, obviously, but okay,
yes.
So that's a no. That's a hard no.
That's a no for that one.
On the traveling outside the universe.
And when I told that to some class one day, one of the kids yelled out really loud, 74,000 years, I'd be dead. So yes, that is
like,
correct.
That is true.
By a little bit. So could we travel outside the universe? Well, I don't even know if we could go faster than the speed of light if we could go outside the universe, because the universe is everything. So could
but
you
like
travel?
But like our, what we know of our universe, I mean, well, yeah, I mean, 74,000 years.
So that just
That's
takes us to the nearest star, and we're still inside the galaxy. Then we have to go much farther on orders of magnitude farther away to get out of the galaxy and then to get out of the universe. That's a really deep question, because what's outside the universe? We don't know.
It's making me feel super itty bitty teeny weeny.
Exactly.
Like there's, wow.
This is what being an astronomer is like. It's dealing with the depression of how small you are in the scheme of things.
I'm a little depressed. Maybe I ought to be a pessimist now. Wait a minute.
See? See what happens
now
to you?
Now I know why you are the way you are.
I know.
It's a lot of questions.
It's a super downer sometimes.
Maybe we should make a faster shuttle.
Or that's fast, yeah.
I mean, you're saying like the fast one we have available.
Exactly.
Maybe we should go back to the old drawing board.
So here's one of the other thoughts. So let's say you launch a crew to Alpha Centauri and you think, okay, well, they're going to reproduce and have babies and their babies will have babies and they'll finally get to Alpha Centauri. But in the meantime, in those 74,000 years, maybe 10,000 years from now, we'll build a spacecraft that'll get there in like a day. And then those people are still flying for 70,000 years, and this other spacecraft goes right
like,
past them.
It like waves at them as it's going by, like,
exactly.
Hey,
see you later. Keep looking up. Exactly. So that's the thing is you got to pick the right time and the right technology to do it, or else it's a total waste.
This is seriously depressing.
Oh, man. I'm sorry to end it on that one. That kid shouldn't have asked that question.
Let's focus on it only takes 7 months to get to Mars. If I want to take a nice Martian vacation, maybe I get.
There we go. That's the place to go.
Months.
That's the place to go. Matt Damon will be there. It'll be fine.
Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Kevin Wagner for joining us. And get in touch with us. We're on Twitter at Looking Up Podcast or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
Ask us a question, give us a topic suggestion, or ask your kids what they'd like to ask an astronomer or scientist, and we'll answer it on future episodes and not be at all depressing whatsoever.
Exactly. Happy thoughts. And remember to subscribe to Looking Up on iTunes or from wvxu.org. Our theme song and additional music is by Why, that's W-H-Y, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, and Josh Elstro is our engineer.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.